Parsha Shlach, we have the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, when it says, Oy v'achochem v'lechem ha'aretz, we're interested in the Hebrew bread that was made in Eretz Yisrael, we have a mitzvah to be Makir Shalom. Amin ha'tar, the mitzvah only applies in Eretz Yisrael. And it's only with the Rabbanon that it applies all over the world and includes Lord as well. The Gemara in Sukkos in the second parak has an argument regarding Eretz Yisrael and Kamazeh, whether the application to be Makir Shalom today in Eretz Yisrael is min ha'torah or min the Rabbanon. The conclusion in the Gemara is that even if one were to assume, which is also questionable, even if one were to assume that Hafrosha's Trumas of Maisris in Eretz Yisrael today is min ha'torah, because the Kedusha Eretz Yisrael is min ha'torah, but Chala, the obligation to be Makrish Chala today in Eretz Yisrael would only be with the Rabbanon. The Gemara says the reason for the difference is that with respect to Chala, the Halacha requires Bias Kulte, requires that the majority of Bnei Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael. So the original Knesset of the Haaretz in the days of Yeshua Benun, all the 12 Shvatim were there. Then after the Churban Bais Rishon, there was no Chala, there was no Trumas and Maisis. When they came back the second time in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, the overwhelming majority of the Jews remained behind in Bavel. So the Gemara says, even if one were to assume that the Chiyuv to be Makrish Trumas and Maisis in Eretz Yisrael today is Menatorah, but the obligation to be Makrish Chala is only Midirabot. It doesn't mean that the obligation to be Makrish Chala in Chutz La'aretz is on the same level as obligation in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says in Chorus that Chala's Chutz La'aretz is a much lower level, only Chutz La'aretz. It's a much lower level chiyuv than in Eretz Yisrael proper. So the Gemara has several kulas in Chorus Dav Chav Zayin. The Gemara has a list of kulas that apply only to Chala's Eretz Yisrael, only to Chala's Chutz La'aretz because of the fact that it's a lower din de Rabbanan. So one of these dinim is very relevant. One of the dinim is normally, if you have something that grew in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be makrish trumas and maisris. As long as you're not makrish, everything is tekel. You're not permitted to eat it. And if you eat it, there's a punishment on nisa b'dei shamayim. If the din of tekel is min ha'torah, and the hafrosha has to be done in advance of eating. You can't eat and then you lie on the fact you're going to make a hafrosha later. You ate tevel, actually you're only going to use the tevel retroactively. The same is true regarding challah in Eretz Yisrael, but with respect to challah's chutz la'aretz, so the Tanoim who introduced this chumrah introduced it with a kula, that you're permitted to eat all you want, you can be makrish at the end. This is especially relevant, let's say today in America there are a lot of bakeries where they have a good hashgachah. But the Hashgacha only supervises that the ingredients are all kosher. The Hashgacha doesn't always take care of the fact that they should be makrish challah. Or some Hashgachas are makel, we'll discuss soon. Some Hashgachas are makel that there's no need to be makrish challah on nash, on cake and cookies and these kind of things. And that's not the accepted opinion. The Aruch HaShulchan in his commentary on Yerideya quotes such an opinion from the Rabbi Yoyne and Brochus that whatever cakes or cookies are only eaten as a snack, one is not obligated to be makrish challah from that. Somehow all the babies know that or hashulah. Such an opinion, or hashulah. That's not at all the accepted opinion. When you read the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't appear like that at all. So a lot of times you'll buy cake and cookies from a bakery where the hashgachah is good. But we know that either the Rabbi Machshir is makel on the hafrosha's challah, the cakes or cookies, or the Rabbi Machshir is machmer on it, but the baker is makel on the cakes or cookies. So the simple solution is you take a little bit off. When you get home, you take off a little bit. So the Mishnah says that you're not permitted. The Mishnah says in the end of Beitza, one is not permitted to be makrish trumas and maisus, so to be makrish challah on Yom Tov or on Shabbos. And the Gemara says explicitly that even a challah chutz la'aretz, with the dinas oichel v'hoylach v'hakach makrish, you're allowed to eat all you want, provided that you makrish the challah at the end, you're still not permitted to be makrish challah in chutz la'aretz. One could have argued the point and said that the prohibition against hafrosha's truma, hafrosha's challah on Shabbos Yom Tov is misakan manah, that the food was also v'achila to begin with, and now you're making with the v'achila. But in the case of challah chutz la'aretz, when you were permitted to eat all you want, provided that you makrish at the end, so you can say that it's not a violation of Misakin Mon. It was Mutta Bachiva before anyway, so the Gemara says nonetheless, he's still not permitted to be Makrish Chalas Chutz La'aretz on Shabbos and Yom Kippur. So let's say someone bought a ton of cakes and cookies, had a Sinta, they bought a lot of cake and cookies, and Erev Shabbos that he got to be Makrish Chalas. So if it's a Chutz La'aretz, there's no problem. You can be Oichel B'Hoylach, provided you leave a little bit over at the end, And then you mafresh kala at the end, if the Shabbos is over or if the yontif is over. So this kula of echel v'haylach v'achakach mafresh, you can eat all you want, provided that you make afrosh at the end. This kula only applies in chalas chutzlort. It doesn't apply in Eretz Yisrael. Even though the Gemara's conclusion in Ksubis is that chalas is manazah and Eretz Yisrael is only the Rabbanon, but it's not on the same low level the Rabbanon, it's chalas chutzlort. It's a higher level the Rabbanon, and this kula of eating, provided that you'll be mafresh at the end, doesn't apply. Years ago in Eretz Yisrael, it used to be a practice among the yeshiva bachur who didn't know, they learned Gemara, but they didn't know Shulchan Aruch. So they, of course, the yeshiva bach nobody trusts the hashgacha of the rabbanut. So you can't rely on the rabbanut. That's a given. With your eyes closed, they don't trust the hashgacha of the rabbanut. So whenever they would buy a bottle of soda, so there would be sugar, there would be flavoring, so you have to be mafresh trumas amaisa. So you assume the rabbanut does not be liable, of course. So they would drink a whole bottle of soda, leave over at the end, and then they make all the hafroshes at the end. So this is a joke. This is a mistake, because this school of the Shmir Shavskel Chasa has a comment about this. He quotes it. There is a, the Peres Yisrael has a commentary on the Mishnah Yisrael. One place, if the Peres Yisrael made a mistake, he writes that this school of Echad Ohelach V'Achakach Makrish applies even in Eretz Yisrael, on Demai, on certain cases where the Hafrosha is only a Chura. So the Shmir Shavskel Chasa quotes the post and says that that's absolutely not correct. It's a special Kula that only applies in Chalas Kutsavar. Another kula that the Gemara has a whole list of a series of kulas. Two of them are relevant to us. I'll speak about only these two. The one is Echad Ohelach V'Achakach Makrish, and the other kula is that usually, what do you do with the truma? What do you do with the challah? Challah has the same kedusha as truma. You're supposed to give it to a kohen. It's one of the 24 matnas kohuna. The Gemara speaks about chaf dalid matnas kohuna. There are more than 24 matnas kohuna. So we're not exactly sure how the Tanoim made this. How they come out to this number? It's not a round number. They pick the number 24. So obviously they're combining several matnas kohunas together to come up to the number of 24. So there are different suggestions. Dr. Rebel, many years ago, published an essay about this. Rabbi Ruchem Perler has a long essay about this. And this is Eich HaMitzvus from the Rav Sadigan. How do they come to the number 24? Whatever. So the challah has the same thing as the truma. He's supposed to give it to the kohanim. And they're supposed to eat the challah in a state of dusha de tahara. So Chalas Chutzlort is also supposed to be the Kohen. He's supposed to eat it in a state of Kedusha Letara. And before the Kohen eats it, he should say a bracha. If it's very minimizayin, so he says first the Amoitzi, whatever happens to be, first he'll say the Birchas Amenin, and then he says the Birchas Amitzvah, Shekudushan, Bidushos, Shalar, Mitzivon, or Alachilas Truma. Like the Kohen recite the bracha before they do, and Shekudushan, Bidushos, Shalar, Mitzivon, or Alachilas Truma. So the same over here. They will recite the special bracha, which appears, the text of the bracha appears the last page in the Rambam in Hilchas Trumas. So he happens to be speaking about eating challah chutzlort. Happens to be speaking about that text. That you recite first the Birchas Hanenin, Havoitzi, Avorim, Mitzvahinus, and then you recite the Birchas Hanenin. So like on Pesach night, you say Havoitzi, then we say Hashem Kedushan, the Mitzvahs Mitzvah, Alachilos Matzah. You say first the Birchas Hanenin, and then the Birchas Hanenin. So the Gemara has a kula regarding challah chutzlort. How can you give the chalas chutzlorets to a kohen to eat the chutzlorets? Chutzlorets has a din with the rabbanon like at one big cemetery. We treat chutzlorets like a beis hakvaros. Kohanim are not permitted to live in chutzlorets. It's a question why they still do. So Rabbi Kibeger on the Shulchan Aruch works hard to be the Asher of the Rebbe. The Gemara says even a kohen who was born in chutzlorets has to run as fast as possible to go back to Eretz Yisrael. So that's a question why they make them today. So the question is, if the Rabbanon they gave Chutzlorts the status of a Beis HaKvaras, Tumas Eretz Amim, Mark calls it, Tumas Eretz Amim, they made a din with the Rabbanon, all the Chutzlorts is coming like a cemetery. So how can you give the challah to a Kohen, the Chutzlorts, and you should eat it? By definition, he's staying in the Chutzlorts. So the Tumas is coming, the Kohen is coming. So how do we permit him to eat the challah, which has the exact same din as Tumas? So the Gemara says, obviously built into the din of challah Chutzlorts was a detailed halacha that there are two levels of tumah. There's a tumah hayotza olav migufoy. The tumah develops in the person. A person is a zav, zava, lidi, or levis, mitzora, a balkari. Something happened in the body that the person developed tumah. Then there's a tumah, a makabal tumah, bibachutz. I go into a cemetery. So the tumah of the mace is transmitted to me. Or I pick up a dead mouse. So there's a mouse, it's one of the shmoyna shvatzim, hamurim, atayra. So if I touch a dead mouse, so it's metame. I pick it up by the tail, if I pick it up by the trap, then it's only, it's not maga, it's only masa, then it's not mitame. Then now it's only mitame the maga, not the masa. If you have meat in the, let's say meat in the A&P, that's nevela, that's not yishofnus, even if it's in a wrapper, and even if I'm wearing gloves, as it is, there's no maga, but once I pick it up, that's the masmasa. So nidlas behemas mitame the maga uba masa. Odom is mitame the maga the masa uba oha, even if I'm just in the same room. And the Shemayna Shratz Mahmura Matara, the eight, the rodents that the Torah says on the Tami B'mosam, are only the Tami B'maga, it's not the Tami B'masa. Okay, so the halacha distinguishes, there are several distinctions between a Tumah HaYotza and the Guth, where the Tumah developed in the body of the person, namely Zav Zav and Nidhi Aledis Katsara Balkari, these cases, as opposed to the Tumah which I received from the outside. I touched the maize, I came into the oil maize, or I touched the dead sherets, I touched the nidlas behemah. So the Gemara says, this is one of the coolest and chalas chutzlores, that a tomei, who only has a tumor that he received mibachutz, the kohen went to his father's funeral. He was obligated to go to one of the seven relatives who died and he participated in the funeral. Or the kohen, let's say, picked up a package of non-kosher meat, and he became tamei because the nidlas behemah is matamei b'mago b'masa. So the kohen is tamei, and he didn't go to mikveh yet. So still, he's permitted to eat chalas chutzlartz. He's only forbidden to eat chalas chutzlartz if he has a tumah hayotza olam migufa, if he developed the tumah. So let's say the kohen is a balkari. So the kohen is tamei, so he has to go to mikveh in order to be able to eat the chalas chutzlartz. The practice, the shach, the other day, Hilchos Challah quotes from the Maharil, who writes that the custom today is that we don't permit the Kohanim to eat Chalas Chutz La'aretz, even if they'll go to the mikveh and remove whatever tumas balkari, he may possibly have, we don't permit it. It's an interesting reason why, because there were so many pogroms over all the generations, that we are now in violation of a takana de rabbanon. The Gemara has in the second parak in Ksubas a din de rabbanon that goes as follows: Min haTorah, if a man comes and he says, "I'm Jewish," then we believe him. And he says, "I'm Jewish and I'm a kohen," again you believe him. You give him the first aliyah, and you give him truma, and he shidduchin, and he can do pidyon haben, and so on. And the rabbanon they made a din that if a man comes from the middle of nowhere, then comes from Europe after the war, comes to America and says he's a kohen, so I match 99% of them are telling the truth. 95% are telling the truth. And some of them are making up the story that they're Kohan. So the din min haTorah is that the person is believed on his own. We apply the klal erech adam b'isur. We treat the status of Kohuna like Yisur. And with the Rabbanon, the Gemara says, they made a takana that if a man comes and he says, "I am a Kohen," you shouldn't believe him unless he produces two edim. Unless he produces one eid, he has to produce an eid echad other than himself, who says about him that he is a kohen. So this is the same din, let's say, identical with the din that the Gemara has regarding a get. Let's say a couple come to get divorced. So they come to a rabbi, and the rabbi gets a sefer and the eidim, and they write a get. So how does the rabbi know that this is the husband and that's the wife? Maybe that's the boyfriend. Maybe the woman wants to marry this man. He makes believe that he is the husband, and he tells him the husband's name, and he gives a get, and then they go, and then the rabbi gives the woman a document that she's permitted to remarry. Then they go to a different rabbi, and the wife produces a document. The rabbi gave her a document that I'm divorced, and the one who gave her the get was her boyfriend. It wasn't her husband. So how do you know that the man is telling the truth? So the Gemara says that min haTorah, if a man comes to Bezi and he says, "I am the husband," you believe him, and he says what his name is, and the wife says what her name is, min haTorah they believe. And it's a chumra midirabbanan that we don't believe the man when he says, "I am the husband." He has to produce some evidence. He has to show wedding photographs, he has to show a driver's license, he has to show some evidence that he is married with this woman, or he brings an edef, and he says, "I know them, I've known them for many years. This is the husband and this is the wife." But then the Mishnah has in Gittin, the Mishnah discusses the situation that the Romans threw a person in prison, and he doesn't know how many ages, he doesn't know how many centuries he's going to be sitting in the prison over there. So the fellow screams out from the pit, he's in a bar, and someone on top of the bar hears the man in the bar scream out, "I'm Jewish, and my name is so-and-so, and I live in such and such a city. Do me a favor, go give my wife a gift." So how do we know that he's telling the truth? Maybe he's not the husband. Maybe he's telling a lie. So the Mishnah says that since it's a shachat chak, you have no braver. There's no way for the husband. The fellow is in prison. There's no way for him to bring another eid effort to testify about him that he is the husband, that this is his name, and so on. So the shachat chak, we revert back to the din deraisa. We rely on the nemunas that the person has, the notary, to say, I am the husband, and this is my name, this is my wife's name, you should give a gift. So the same is true over here regarding kohunim. The Maharil says that after the war, many Jews came, survivors of the community. They were the only survivors in the community. So what do you mean? Go bring another eid effort to testify that you are a kohen. I don't know if there are any other survivors from that village. So that's the end of the kohuna line. Since I can't produce another eid effort other than myself who's going to identify me as a kohen, so my descendants are not going to be kohanim. So the Maharil says that just like by the get, if you have a big shasat chak, we are makel to revert back to the din deraisa to rely on eid effort, then be surim. The same is true regarding the kahuna here. So the Maharil says, but still, safkos, that is the din. But safkos, saf, bottom line, we are really in violation of the takara de rabbanim. They made it close. If it's a shasat chak, then you don't have to live up to this takara. So that's why the custom developed that we don't allow any kohanim to eat any truma this manasa. Even though they can go to the mikveh and remove the tumas balkeri. They can't remove the tumas meis because we don't have paraduma water. But you don't have to remove the tumas meis for the purpose of eating kalas for his lords. Because tumas meis is not a tuma yotzala mikufa. That's a tuma that he got from the outside. It didn't develop in his body. So that should not bother us. That should not prevent the kohen from eating the kalas chutz lords. The reason why we don't permit them to eat the shachos tamarot, the reason why we don't allow the kohanim today to eat the chalas chutz lords, is because of the fact that many instances, over all the generations, there were so many situations where there was such a shasat chak, because of all the pogroms, that the kohen had to be relying on his, we had to rely on his own nemunas to identify him as a kohen. That's why we stay away from this practice of eating the truma.
What
is the person
steps forward and says, I'm a
bechor? He says he's a bechor?
Yeah.
For what purpose is that? He has to give Binyan Aben?
Well, he has a bechor in terms of Yerusha.
Yerusha? No. You don't believe him? No, no. It's a question whether he needs one aid or two aid. That's a question. Well, it's mammonism. When it comes to money, you should really need two witnesses. So that's how Machlekes in Rishayim. The Rashbam on Baba Basra, Pergesh Nevin, says you need two witnesses, but that's Mom. And there's a thesis read, and Yibam stands out his head and gives the whole interpretation why you only need eight effort, why it's different. But he's not believing on his own, that's for sure.
What are the acceptable pieces of evidence to identify someone as a
Kohen? As a Kohen, Min HaTorah, he just says, I'm a Kohen. They ask him, how do you know you're a Kohen? He says, my father was Kohen. He's the Dukhan himself. So Min HaTorah, he's believed on his own. Mid Rabbanon, he has to produce whatever possible. He has to produce some other eid effort.
No, I'm saying, what are the acceptable pieces of evidence that he can't produce to prove it at the end? You don't take him on his word.
A witness who says, I lived in the same village and I know his father was a guy.
There is evidence.
Huh?
There's no tangible evidence.
No. Right. Take the word of an eid effort. Eid effort is now. Yeah.
Yes.
So we mentioned the pasuk in this week said, the obligation in Makrish Chala applies if you eat lechem. What constitutes lechem? So we usually say, Havoitzi lechem and haaretz on bread. But the Gemara says in Brachas, that sometimes you recite Hamotzi Lechem Haaretz on cake and cookies as well. If you're eating wheatina or farina or something like that, oatmeal cereal, you can eat a part of it and you never say Hamotzi Lechem Haaretz. There's no Tzuras Hapas. You never say Hamotzi unless the thing is in a loaf shape. But if you have cake or cookies, the Gemara calls that Pas, Lechem is Pas, but it's Pas HaBobikistan, has a subtitle, it's a subcategory. So usually it's mezainas, but if you eat enough of it, if you eat a ton of it, and it fills you up, then you have to wash, and you have to say hamotzi, you have to recite Birchas Hamotzi. So basically, cake and cookies is also called lechem. It's only a subcategory of lechem, it's pasav obikistan. So that's why the accepted opinion is not like the Zohar HaShulchan, who says that cake and cookies, you don't have to be makrish challah. We assume that cake and cookies are also considered lechem. There's some, I remember there was one baker who thought that you only have to be makrish challah on challahs. Red, you don't have to be makas chalas. Chalas are chalas. So I explained to him that in biblical Hebrew, the word chala means dough. It doesn't mean when we take out the little part and we say this is chala, that's a Yiddish. It's a slang that appears in the Mishnayos. But strictly speaking, in biblical Hebrew, what you take out is called sugar. And the whole batch of dough is called chala. So it has nothing to do to say that the only makas chala, that's a total mistake. The dinner is supposed to be makas chala even on cake and cookies. If it has a body, if it's the type of a cake or a cookie, then if you need enough of it, that would constitute a kriya suda, and you would have to say, I'm lazy. Then it's called pasta above the kismen, and it's pasta.
You don't have to be makas or Jewish obey product.
Right. If it's from a non-Jewish company, then you don't have to be makas chala. We'll get to some of the details in a minute. Now the Mishnah says that on Sufganim, there's no, the Mishnah and Chala say on Sufganim, there is no need to be Makrish Chala. What are Sufganim? So Sufganim means donuts. And donuts, first of all, only have a Blila Raka. There isn't a thick dough. It's not like when you make Chalas, when you make bread, so you have a very thick dough that you really have to knead. Number one, it has a Blila Raka. And number two, it has a bishul. It doesn't have an afiyah. So donuts for sure are bar minim zayis. So the Mishnah says that subganim spog is a sponge. So donuts are called subganim because it's spongy-like, has a lot of air pockets, a lot of air space. So that's subganim. So the Mishnah says you only put them in a challah if it's chilosa subganim. The self was subgunning. In the beginning it was subgunning, and in the end it was subgunning. But in the beginning it was chilosa isa, and in the end it was subgunning. At the beginning it was subgunning, and at the end it's isa, then you are chayv and chala. So what's the beginning and what's the end? So this is a major dispute in the commentaries on the Mishnah, what is that talking about? So the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch is the Ramban, who says as follows. At the time that the Ramban says like this, it all depends on afiyah. It's only considered lechem if you baked it in an oven. How do you know? So the Gemara derives that from a pasuk of all places that appears in the Torah. It says, "Ba'ofu esa noshim lach nechem b'tanur echad." Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish the Jewish people. They won't have any food to eat, and 10 women will bake the little mashahu of bread that they'll have. The 10 women will be able to bake it simultaneously in the same oven. So the Gemara derives from that pasuk that only was baked in an oven. If you have a fear, that's called lechem. Of esa nashim lach mechem b'tan rechad lechem ha'ofer b'tan kori lechem lechem shein ha'ofer b'tan eni kori lechem. That's the Gemara in Sochem on Daf Lamed Ches. It's in Brachos. Also happens to be on Daf Lamed Ches. Same topic. Accidentally, Brachos in itself and talks about the same topic. When is it called lechem? When do you say ha'ofer lechem in Oritz? When is it lechem for matzah? Although Pesach has to be also called lechem, and for chiyuv challah it's also totally a lechem. All of these are interconnected.
Okay.
We'll talk about bagels in a minute. Right. So the Ramban learns like this. Chilasa isa means when I mix the flour with the water, if I plan to bake it, it becomes chayv and chala right away. Even if in the end I change my mind and the stuff I don't bake it. Let's say in the end I cook it. I put a lot of water in the pot and then I have these things cooked or in a deep fry in oil. So the Ramban says, if chilasa isa, if in the beginning when I mix the flour with the water, I plan to do an afiyah, so even if self was gone, and even though the self I do official, it's a very neschai b'chala because of the intention that I had in the beginning. But let's say it was chilasa subgan, and in the beginning I mixed flour with water and I intended to cook it in a deep fry of oil, and then with the self I changed my mind and I bake it in an oven, so the mice I baked it, so it's chai b'chala. So this is the way the Ramban reads the Mishnah, and that's how we pass in l'halacha. Both with respect to Hamotzi Lechem and Oretz, and with respect to Chiyuv Challah. That it all depends on Afiyah. If you had an Afiyah, then it's called Lechem. But if you had a Lila, when you mix the flour with the water and you plan to do an Afiyah, so that also has the status of Lechem, even if with the soap you never do the Afiyah. The Rabbi Natan does not learn. Taisus always quotes Rabbi Natan. So the Taisus in Brachas and in Pesachim and in Sanhedrin and in Bavakam, all over the place, Taisus quotes this Rabbi Natan in many different areas. Rabbi Natan doesn't agree with the Rambam. And the Rabbi Natan learns that the obligation to be Makrish Chala depends on either Lisha or Afia, either one or the other. So the Rabbi Natan reads that Mishnah as follows. Mishnah says if you had Tchilosa or Iso, Yichai v'chalosa, Tchilosa Iso means if there was a Delila Ovo. If you needed a thick dough, even if you plan to cook it in a deep fry in oil, and the Basof you cooked it, it's Chai v'chala, because the Delila Ovo is called Lisha, and Lisha makes a Chiyuv Chala. And if you had a blila raka, it wasn't the thick dough, it was a batter, like a sponge cake, like most of the ready-made cakes that you buy a package in the store, you just mix it with water. So that doesn't, it's not a thick dough that rises like collars. It's a liquidy, very, very liquidy, and it pours very easily. So that's a blila raka, so that's only chayv challah if you do it afiyah at the end. This is Shitas Rabbi Natan. So in Shulchan Aruch, we don't accept the Rabbi Natan's opinion. But the Shach recommends you should be choshish for the Rabbi Natan. So take, for example, the following. Let's say a woman is making one of these ready-made batters. She buys a box of whatever ready-made cake in the store. And you mix the flour with the water, and it's very liquidy. So according to the Rabbi Natan, she plans to bake it in the oven. So according to the Ramban, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you can be mafish challah right now. How are you going to be mafish challah? It's all liquidy. So you take a spoon. You take out some of the liquid, and you put it on the side, and you curry shem kala, you declare that this should be kala. So the Pshat says that the minig is to be koshish for the Rabbein Tam. Rabbein Tam says that it doesn't become chai v'chala till after the afiyah. But since you had a blila rako, you have to wait till after the afiyah, then you should get a shem lech. And the Rabbein Tam proves this from a famous passage that appears in the Gemara in different places. The Gemara quotes a pasuk, "Obatzeh be'er nietz Hashem." That if the ganav recites a bracha, if the ganav cheats in business, he cheats everybody, then he makes a big donation to the yeshiva. He stole all the money from all the other people, and then he gives a donation to charity. So that's what this pasuk says. But say, Beirach, the ganav, who blesses God, Nietz Hashem. It's a blasphemous. It's sacrilegious. It's not acceptable as a mitzvah. He's not giving charity from his own money. That's not stuck if he gives from someone else's money. So the Gemara gives the following mashal. Harei shegozel sor shel chitin. A ganav stole a sack of grain from somebody. Tchonach, he grinds it up, the losho, and he mixes it with water. Va'avo, then he goes and he bakes it. He's religious. The ganav is religious. V'hifrish v'manachal. Just benodim l'chaveiro. He's not careful. But benodim l'amokim is very medatric. So when he's mafrish the chala, and he says the bracha, so then the brisa says, and he comes to say the bracha is Botzeh Berech Nietz Hashem. The ganav says the bracha on the mitzvah that's performing with the stolen item, so that's not acceptable as a mitzvah. So the Rabbi Natan comments in the Tosfos there, why does the Braisa give the story, he ground up, the ganav stole the flour, then he stole grain, stole the stock of grain, then he grinds it up, then he kneads it, he mixes it with water, then he bakes it, and then he's mafrish challah. Nobody waits till after they bake it to be mafrish challah. The women all know you have to be mafrish challah right away when you mix the flour with the water. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So the answer is, because the ganav is making a loose batter. He's not making a thick dough. He's making a blila rakon. That's top of the din. But if you make a blila rakon, that's called chilosa sukkah. So you have to wait till after the afiyah to be mafrish challah. That's what the Rabbi Natan says. So strictly speaking, we don't pass like this whole Rabbi Natan. But the Shach recommends to be choshish for the Rabbi Natan's opinion, not to be mafrish challah in such a case. If it's a leva raka, to wait to be mafrish challah till the end. Now he raised the issue of the bagels. If this is the din regarding the donuts, that the donuts don't have an afiyah, the donuts only have a bishul, they're cooked in a deep fry of oil, so perhaps the din should be the same regarding bagels. The bagels have a blila ovo, they have a thick dough, but then they're placed into burning hot water for a couple of seconds before they bake them in the oven. So there was such an opinion floating around by the Balabatim. The Rabbanim never agreed with this. The Balabatim had such an attitude that since it's cooked in the water before you bake it, so the bracha is mezainis, and you don't have to say havoitzi, and you don't have to wash, and you don't have to bench. So this was never accepted by the Rabbanim. The Rabbanim said that the only time it's considered a bishul is if the cooking it in the water would make it roi lachilo. But when they put the bagel dough into the burning hot water, they only leave it in for a few seconds to give it that special texture, that flavor that bagels have, as opposed to bread. But if you were to take it out of the water then without baking it, it would still be raw. It wouldn't taste like bagels. So since you still need the afiyah in order to make it very lachila, so that's not called mizbash. It's interesting, we have a collection of the drushes of the Rebbe Yehuda that he himself published during his lifetime. So some of the drushes are philosophical presentations, from Talmudic Kapulim, all kinds of drushes, different areas. And then sometimes the drushes simply are, he gave musar to the Balabatim that they're violating specific needs. So in one of the drushes of Shabbos Shuva drusha, he threatens to resign from the rabbin over the issue of bagels. He says, I told you last year that the bagels are halachic. People are still not listening. So obviously there's some lack on my part that I'm communicating about the bottom. They can't understand what I'm saying. So he threatens to resign over the bagels issue. That he keeps on insisting in his rushes that the bagels are halachic. There's no tzad to be made.
If something like a bread machine were impossible to do it during this month, you could only do it at the end. So you still have the mitzvah.
Okay, you still have the mitzvah. Yeah. Still have the mitzvah, but then you have an added problem.
But is there a quantity though?
Yeah, we'll get to the quantity. But then you'll still have an added problem because when you bake, when you have dough and you're not yet makrish challah, so then all of the dough is tevel. So after you makrish challah, you remove the yeast of tevel. But if I already bake the dough in a pan, so that pan becomes straight. So this is a simple solution. It says in the Yerushalmi, on Mishnah Eskala, it says in the Talmud Yerushalmi, if you makrish challah after you baked it already, so you should say the little bit of dough that the little bit that you slice that you take off. You say, I declare this as challah to take off the yisat tevel from all of the food that was baked and from the bliya in the pan. So if you make that declaration, so that's covered. So you made it kosher. You don't have to kasher the pan in such a case. You have to say, I want to be makrish challah on behalf of the everything that I have plus on the bliya that's in the pan. Now, in Europe, there was such a common practice that the bakers, even the most religious bakers, who wore makrish challah on cakes and cookies, but somehow on a loose batter, they would not be makrish challah. When they make sponge cake, they wouldn't be makrish challah. So, the Avnei Nezer, the Sabbath Shavar Rebbe, has a tshuva on this topic. So he says, well, it's a minhag by all the bakers. What's not minhag? What they know what they're doing. We should ignore what the bakers do. We should consult the rabbanim. So, what do the rabbanim have to say? Okay. So first he says it's wrong. Then he says maybe it is right. So he's with Sade, he comes with the following suggestion. He says if it's very liquidy, if the batter pours very, very easily, it's not even a blila rakka. Sometimes you have a blila of a very thick dough. It's not going to pour at all. Like when you make challah, a very thick dough. And sometimes you have a thin dough. It doesn't really pour, but it's not as hard as it is when you make challah. Then you have a thin batter that pours not exactly like water, pours not exactly like orange juice. It's a thicker liquid. But it's a liquid, basically. So the Avnei Nezer suggests that even though you bake it in an oven, maybe that's called bishul. Maybe that's not called afiyah. Maybe it's only called afiyah if you bake something that you put in that was a little bit in a semi-solid state. But if the thing is totally liquidy, so he suggests that maybe that's called a bishul, and he thinks that maybe it's not chayav kala. Soloveitchik told us that his mother told him that when she got married, her father-in-law, Chaim Soloveitchik, told her that she doesn't have to be makrish challah on sponge cake because it is cheshbon also. He said, Chalas chutzlars, the Gemara has so many different kulas in Eretz Yisrael, he would recommend that it should be makrish challah on sponge cake. But Chalas chutzlars, we have so many other kulas in the Gemara. So it means whenever there's a tzad l'hakla, we'll make a makhalsim, so it's a liquidy batter that pours very easily, he said he would be naked like the Avnei Nezer, like the Sochet Shavar, that you don't have to be makrish challah. It's a question, there are bakeries where Rabbanim give ashdoches, and they're makel on this. Some of the Rabbanim are makel on this, so that's a question, who are their customers? So if the customers are all balabatim from their community, this is the rabbi, so the rabbi holds that that's the din. So once he has the right to pass the din, but once you have a national hashgacha or an international hashgacha, so that's not right. The rabbi relies on his personal opinion. But a lot of think this rabbi has such a good reputation. I'm sure. Of course, everything he does is in accordance with the Zen Shulchanar. This is not exactly what the Zen Shulchanar. There's already a kula now. They raise it. So that's not right. One gives a hashgacha that's a little more than just for my neighborhood. So then they should, that's why the OU Hashgach is international, so they have to be machma more than a local Hashgach. But they have all kinds of people buying the products. We mentioned earlier that there is a minimum amount that you have to pay, you have to need, in order to be chayav challah. What is that minimum amount? So the Mishnayos tell us that it's sheer isas midbar. It's the amount of flour that they that would be the equivalent of a asiris ha'eifa, an omer. In the days of the midbar, every person got an omer of the month. Asiris ha'eifa is mem gimel beitzim v'chomish beitzim, 43 and a fifth beitzim. The shach, the other mafarshim, right, an easy way to remember is the challah b'gematria is 43. Ches lamedet. How does that turn out? That very decision. And the way to remember the fifth is that the last letter in Ches Lamed Hey is Hey. So that's the 43. That's what the Shach writes. He usually doesn't give you any gematrios. The Mefarshim on the Mishnah is right. That is wrong. So how does that translate in our terms? How did it turn out? So Rabbi Hankins, Lefanos Rabbi, who was a famous poysik in New York before Moshe came on the scene. So Rabbi Hankin wrote in his sefer that the as the story used to distribute, so he writes in his sefer that between approximately between 3 and 5 pounds of flour one should be mafresh challah without a bracha. If you're using 5 pounds of flour, then you should mafresh challah with a bracha. It really shouldn't depend. It's a little inaccurate what Rabbi Hankin said. It really doesn't depend on weight. It should really depend on volume. And it doesn't always correspond. It depends how fine the flour was ground. If you grind the flour very defined particles, then you're going to have a lot of air space. You're going to have less of the volume of flour. But roughly speaking, that's what's usually assumed. Approximately, that's the shear. That if you mix together flour with water, if you only have 3 pounds of flour, you mark the shalot without a profit. If you have more than 5 pounds of flour, then you mafresh challah with the broth. What do you mean if you have, when do you have, let's say, they bake cookies, 2 pounds of flour, they bake cookies. Then they bake the cake, 2 pounds of flour. Then they bake a different kind of cookie, another 2 pounds of flour. So sach hakol, all together, we have 6 pounds of flour. But it's 2 pounds of flour, we did this thing. Then another 2 pounds of flour with that, and another 2 pounds of flour with this. So, and now it's all in the freezer. And we're having a function on Shabbos. So is that chayav challah? So the din is that you have to have one big lila, you have to have one big isa, it should all be together in order to be chayav challah. If I did 2 pounds and then another 2 pounds and another 2 pounds, and nothing became a chayav challah.
Even the same. No bread machine, no consumer bread machine can handle 3 pounds.
Right.
I make 10 pounds of a challah, a bread machine.
So the bread machines would never be chayav challah. Let's say in a bakery, sometimes you have a bakery that's owned by a non-Jew, but you have a lot of times, there's a higher percentage of Jewish lawyers, I think, than non-Jewish lawyers. I think so. So every company has to have a lawyer. So a lot of times the lawyer's salary includes a share in the company. So they'll give him, let's say, 5%, he owns 5% of the company, plus a salary that they take. So if he owns 5% of the Goyish company, so how much flour did they do in one batch? So if they do 100 pounds of flour at one time, and he owns 5% of the company, so then it's chayav challah. The Mishnah says that the other shutz is between a Jew and a non-Jew of many people. So the share that's owned by all of the Jews together adds up to a shear challah, then you have to be mafresh challah. If it adds up to less than a shear challah, then you're not chayav challah. So sometimes you can have a non-Jewish bakery where there's a hidden partnership, there's a hidden owner who happens to be Jewish, and you got to find out about that. There is a din in the Mishnah that we pass from like Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says we pass from like this town of Rabbi Eliezer over here. That aparode, because in the style hasal mitzar from the challah. Mishnah has, let's say I bake 2 pounds of 2 pounds of cookies. And I put it in a basket. And then I bake 2 pounds of the cake, and I put that in the same basket. And I bake that 4 pounds together. Then I bake that 2 pounds of challah. And I put that also in the basket. So if I put it all in one stall, in one basket, even though the lisha was separate, this had 2 pounds, a lisha of 2 pounds, and a lisha of 2 pounds, and another lisha of 2 pounds, and it didn't become a chayav challah yet. And even if I'll be makash challah on the lisha, it's not challah, it's meaningless. It can't be makash challah unless we have the kashir. Now, if I put all of them together in one big basket, now it becomes chai v'chal. Afa roda, the rosa l'sal, roda means one who removes the baked goods from the oven by scraping it up. In the days of the Tanan, you used to plaster the baked goods on the oven. So if you remove it and put it in one basket, then it's chai v'chal. The famous opinion of the Shilp is that once he scrapes out the bread or the cake or the cookies and puts it in the basket with only five colors, sharp yakad, that's only if it's still warm. He scraped it out from the oven and everything is still warm, then it's from sharp yakad. That's not the accepted opinion. We pass an halacha, even if I buy, let's say I bake 2 pounds of cookies on one day, and I put it in the freezer, then I bake 2 pounds of cookies on another day, baked on a third day, 3 different days. If I put them all together in one basket later on, it becomes mechuyev and kal. This is a big...
Is that in the basket, or is a freezer enough to take to the south to retire them?
Right, so the freezer is a big machlokes in the Acharonim from 150 years ago, around the 1850s or so. They had a big machlokes in the following case. The freezer is one big kli, but each bunch of cookies is placed in a different container. But it's placed in a different container. So if each one is in a different, if you have a whole bunch of kelim and one big kelim, you say also, asam utar v'chalo, and you say, no, since each batch of cookies is in a different plastic container, so that's mabakul tzimut together. You say each one is wrapped differently, let's say they're wrapped in tinfoil. So would you still say, asam utar v'chalo, if you have separations or not? So that's an unresolved issue. That's a shayla some hold that asam utar v'chalo, even in such a case.
Why is this different than the bread machine?
The bread machine would be the same. If you only bake one bread at a time, and then you don't have less than 3 pounds of flour, but if you bake a few and you put them all in the same basket together, then it would be chayla v'chalo.
What if you put just 3 separate places on that on a table? Is that in the same basket, or is that in the same basket? So it's serving them at the same time, but not just in the basket.
If it's on the table, it's on the same plea, but the plea doesn't have lids of us, it doesn't have walls that are going up.
Right.
So that's a discussion in the Talmud Yerushalmi. You have the plea, she ain't all of lids of us. If you have walls that go up, and everything is contained within the basket, so that means that Salmatzak. So usually the minig is that you put the sheet, you put a towel on top of all of the challahs together, in the event that that it doesn't have walls going up, we assume that that's also called serious suffering. Let's mention the Shulchan Aruch. There is a dispute in the Mishnayos, if a person mixes, instead of mixing flour with water, he mixes the flour with juices. Orange juice, apple juice, anything other than one of the 9 mashal, anything other than water. So there is a machlokes hatanoim whether this is chayav v'chalo or not. And then this was a debate in the days of the early Rishonim how to paskin. Then it was forgotten what the psak was, and the debate was repeated again in the days of the later Rishonim, the later Bali Hataisis, again a machlokes. So the Maharam Rutenberg, who was the end of the Bali Hataisis, he's considered the last of the Bali Hataisis, and his students were the Rosh. And the Mordechai, after Os Maimoni, the big poskim of the Bali Hataisis, so the Maharam Rutenberg belonged to the group who were known as Chassidei Ashkenaz. That he introduced the Chumrah, you should try to be Yotzei Yedei Kol Hashitos. Like on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, there's a question whether you say Shehecha Yonu or not. When you say Kiddush, so the Maharam Rutenberg had this Chumrah, you should have a free Chodosh or a beggar Chodosh on the table to cover yourself to make sure that you're Yotzei. Many other compromises like that. He made recommendations in order to be Yotzei Yedei Kol Hashitos. That was the trend of the Chassidei Ashkenaz, the Midas Chassidus. So that's over here in Shulchan Aruch. They quote from this Maharam Rutenberg that whenever you make cake, and mainly you're using juices, so it's going to be a machlokes for the Chayav v'chalo. So don't mozach harayin in the machlokes. So the way to resolve the issue is make sure to pour in a significant amount of water, so that water would be able to have done the lisha on all of the flour without all of the juices, so for sure you guys come. So many have that practice, that's the recommendation that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. We mentioned, let's say, if a person bought cookies from a bakery where they're not so careful about Afrosha's challah, if you're concerned, they're not so careful, so you can always be mafish challah when you come home. So the in the days of the Tanoim, when they really used to, Kohanim used to eat the challah, so they didn't require you have to give a significant amount to the Kohen. You don't just give him a record. You don't just give him a crumb. What's going to do with it? But the Shulchan Aruch says that today that we burn the challah. The minhag is that none of the Kohanim eat the challah, even if they went to the mikveh. Explained by the minhag is that they don't eat the challah. So since they're not eating anyway, so Rabbi Yosef Kara writes in the Shulchan Aruch, so what are you going to gain if you be makrish a big amount of challah that burn more? What the Midas Chassid is to burn more? The Bal Tashka. So he says, you just give a mashu. There's no shiur. And then the Ramah quotes from the Maharil that the minhag is that you give a kazais. That's the Ramah and Simishim Kodesh. The Islam post can say that the minhag of the Ramah to give a kazais, that's only if the Balabas is makrish challah and a Ramah. But if I bought it from the store, and I have to be makrish challah, so then you give a crumb. And that's good enough. So the Shaila is what they had a box of cookies. And we ate up all the cookies on Shabbos. And they left over a lot of crumbs on the bottom of the box. So what do you do now? How are you makrish challah? So Tosis has an argument with Rashi and the Shulchan Aruch. They accept the Tosis opinion. But you shouldn't say all the crumbs should be challah and then you throw them in the garbage. What you should do is take out part of the crumb and say these crumbs should be challah and the others should not be challah, because the din is that there is no minimum shear and there is no maximum shear for a challah. Same as for truma. You can give a mashu, you can give 99.99%. You can't give 100%. I can't take all of my tvu and declare everything is truma, because it's the truma and challah are referred to by the Chumash as rashis. Rashis, I mean, so say. Rashis, the gonof of the Rosh Hashanah, so rashis has the connotation of rashis. This is the first amount, and then shiran nikon, there's some shiran, you have to leave something over. So you have to leave a little bit over. So Rashi's opinion is, well, the guy ate a whole box of cookies. He had 10 pounds of cookies. He ate all the cookies. Now he's eating makrish the crumbs of challah. So he left over 99% of the cookies that were eaten. So it is shiran nikon. And Taisa says, no, at the time that you makrish the challah, you have to have shiran nikon. So if you leave over a couple of crumbs, you can't say all the crumbs should be declared as challah, and everything that I ate over Shabbos is now mutter. No, you have to declare some of the crumbs should be challah, and the rest of the crumbs should not be challah. Then you can throw it all out in the garbage. If you're not interested in eating the crumbs, you can throw it all out in the garbage.
Except makrish challah, you can't do it on Shabbos, correct? Is it issue bo'er? Is it issue?
No. The Gemara considers it an issue. One issue is in the second month, that the food was inedible before because of the prohibition of tevel, and not by being makrish challah, a truma, a maisris, I make it mutter b'achila. So that's an issur on the second month. Then the Gemara says, even the chutzlords that you're permitted to eat, provided they're going to be makrish at the end. So there is no issue on the second month. The Gemara says, it's still not allowed. So that's the question, why is it still not allowed? So the Rambam picks up on that. He says, there's an additional issue. In addition to the second month, there's mekka chamemper. He says that once you declare it, that it's challah, it belongs to the Kohanim. So you just switched ownership. By your declaration, you just made it belong to the Shevet Kohanim. Many women have the practice, I'm sure many of your wives have the practice, that when they're makrish challah, they say a bracha shekir shana mitzvah, so it's one of Allah brachas challah. There's another question, what the bracha should be. The Shulchan Aruch says that, strictly speaking, a bracha should really be recited in biblical Hebrew. They shouldn't be recited in slang. And this is really slang, Allah brachas challah. The word challah, biblical Hebrew, means the dough. You should really say Allah brachas truma. You should really say Allah brachas truma. Okay, so there's a different minhagim. So many women have the practice, they say, Ashekidashan, Tasan, Allah Prashas Chala, Allah Prashas Truma, whatever, and that's it. And they take out the dough and they burn it. And they never say, Hareza Truma Lashem Allah Kol, they never say, Hareza Chala, they never make the Kriya Shem. Rabbi Akiva Eger on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch remarks about this practice, and he says that it's not right. The din is that Chala is Chal B'machshava, Truma is Chal B'machshava. The Gemara learns that from the Pasuk in Parshas Korah, where it says, V'nechsham Lachem Trumasfem. So the Gemara has a drush on that pasuk that Truman did tell us the machshav. Nechshav lachem trumasfen. If I think in my mind I want this bushel to be truma, the other 49 bushel, so the truma is chal b'machshav. But the Netziv has a whole essay where he explains what preferable is not to rely on machshav. It's preferable to be magdish v'peh, to say explicitly, I want this to become truma, I want this to become chal. Rabbi Kideger quotes, interesting, but Rabbi Kideger is unhappy about this practice that the women have, that they don't say an actual HaProsha B'peh, they just say the Bracha HaProsha Shalad and HaMapesh Shalad, they don't say anything. So he quotes the Raivin of the Rambam, who quotes from the Shiltas, that proper practice should be to say explicitly, Hareza Chalal Hashem, Hareza Trumal Hashem Aradol. What is he quoting? The Raibid with the Shildis, it's a double person like that. So then it's seen as a whole essay when he writes, what he means to say is that the Shildis lived in Babel. The Shildis lived, and the Raibid lived in France at a time that everybody was Tomei, everything was Tomei. And nonetheless, they're still recommending that even Mizman Hazeh, you should still say a Kri Hashem Befeish. I raise a Trumal Hashem Alakom. So then it's seen, tries to defend the practice of the women, the meaning of the women, it's a very widespread meaning. So he says that since with Mamas everybody's Tomei, and all the pots and pans are Tomei, and all Chala is going to be Tomei, so when you mafresh Chala, in effect, you're causing the Chala to become Tomei, by the Kri Hashem. Before you were Kri Hashem, it wasn't Chala. When you're Kri Hashem, you make it into Chala, and it's already become Tomei before. So you're causing something to become Chala Tomei. So he says, maybe it's bad enough that we have to be mafresh chala, otherwise it's also bachil. You have to be mafresh chala, you have no choice. It's bad enough that you have to be mafresh in the mashav. So why make it worse? Why be kurashem and endow it with the full kedushas chala? It's sufficient. Maybe the women are right. He says, maybe Rabbi Kivega is wrong. Maybe the women are right. Maybe it's bad enough that we have to be mafresh chala in the mashav. Maybe we shouldn't be mafresh. So there are different practices, whether the women, when they say the bracha, the din is that it's chal. So truma is chal b'machshava. It'll remove the yisa tevel. But the question is that the correct practice? No. So the Gemara thinks that it's not. Just in connection with this assumption in the Shulchan Aruch that all bracha should be recited in the biblical Hebrew as opposed to a slang. What we call chala, HaFrash's chala, that's really a slang. It's a slang that the whole Mishnah is that. The Masechus in the Mishnah is called Masechus chala. It always talks about HaFrash's chala, but the word chala in biblical Hebrew really means the dough, the isa. So the Vilna Gaon points out, there was commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, that there is a Mishnah in the middle of brachas that says that if you eat fruits, you say bar pi hoetz, and if you eat vegetables, you say bar pi hadam, and so on. So then the Mishnah quotes Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that you need pirut, further pirut. That's not enough. Not that in all vegetables he say Barkri Abdama. He says, Al Hayarokas, if you're eating green vegetables, if you eat potatoes or carrots, you say Barkri Abdama. But if you're eating green vegetables, it should say Al Hayarokas, Bore Mine Dishoim. Why Bore Mine Dishoim? Because Bore goes on the Bria, when the Baruch Shalom created the world. It says, Bereshit, Bore, Parshas Bereshit, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Deshet. So since in biblical Hebrew that's the way it's described Deshem, so that should have a broader bifayas. So the Vilna Gaon poses the question, why does the Mishnah say Al Hayarokos, if you're eating green vegetables, you say Bar Mini Shoyim? Why does it say Al Hayarokos, you should say Bar Mini Yerokos? Or if you're reading the Shoyim, you should say Bar Mini Shoyim? Why does it switch? If you're reading Yerokos, you should say Bar Mini Shoyim? So he says the Mishnah is written in Mishnaic Hebrew. The Mishnaic Hebrew, these green vegetables are called Yerokos. But the text of the bracha is not supposed to be in Mishnaic Hebrew, it's supposed to be in Biblical Hebrew. Biblical Hebrew, those vegetables are known as the shoyim. So that's why the Mishnah switches in the middle, and it says, Allah Yerokas, I'm a body in the church. So he writes this, the Vilna Gaon writes this, with respect to the correct Nusach HaBracha by HaFrash HaSchala, that it's not really correct to say, Allah HaFrash HaSchala, Allah HaFrash HaSchala, at least it should really say, Allah HaFrash HaSchuma, because that's the Biblical Hebrew. He says it about several other cases in Shulchan Aruch. Regarding the Sahat Tfila, the Sahat Rabbah, his premise is like the Abu Drum. There's a new Sefer Abu Drum, the whole new Sahat Tfila, where the theme of the Sefer is that every phrase in the davening is a biblical expression. So he gives you the biblical source for every expression in the Sefer. And we assume that the brachas are not supposed to be recited in modern Hebrew or Mishnaic. That's why there's an issue regarding the Bracha Shavah Sani Goy, that a biblical Hebrew, what do you mean, that we call a non-Jew a goy, that's a Yiddish, that's a very recent biblical Hebrew, the Jews are called a goy. In fact, halachically, we're the only goy. The other nations of the world are not goy. That's a slang expression. That we refer to the other nations of the world. We say, we're the only goy, I'll begin. The Adinim that are based on that assumption, that the status of goy is only the Jews. How can you say, Rosh Hashanah, Asani goy, that's mamash is slang? That's why many of them held that the Nusach HaBracha is not correct. You should say, Shalom, Asani, Yochri. Should we say Shalom Sani Goy?